Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
If there's any segment of these populations around the world that's resilient and has a pattern of defying the experts and surprising them in terms of what they can get done, it's the ag sectors. But there are big issues here going on. You know, tractors, roads, machinery repairs, machinery fuel, access to the ports, all these other things all in play. And depending on how that issue over there works itself out, how functional will the agricultural sector of Ukraine be after all this is done?
Dr. Dan O'Brien, a Kansas State grain marketing economist.
Ukraine tends to rank fourth in, I think, corn exports, wheat exports. It's a big, big player in all these things. And so one country being knocked out or at the threat of being knocked out has had all this impact on all these markets.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
As the chairwoman of the subcommittee with jurisdiction over Title I programs, I think this hearing is an important component for the work that our full committee is undertaking so that we understand what's working and what's not working with our commodity programs, so Congress is able to make informed decisions as we head into the next Farm Bill reauthorization process.
Illinois Representative Sherry Bustos.
Last month, our subcommittee had the opportunity to hear from and engage with Undersecretary Robert Bonney on the state of farm policy, and we were able to hear his perspectives on USDA's implementation of Farm Bill programs and on other very important work that the department has done so it can continue to support farmers over the past year and in the future. The input combined with the testimony that we'll hear this morning from our National Commodity Associations really is key to our oversight work. And I'm looking forward to the input from our witnesses this morning and also having a continued dialogue with each of our witnesses as we move forward.
At that hearing, Brad Doyle, president of the American Soybean Association.
I guess COVID really put a lot of us back in our homes, in our computers. You know, that's where we work best from. Anything that we can do over the internet, through the website, on a calculator, or sign up for a program without having to go to town, to an office with the restrictions in place, I think that's going to make us more efficient. We also are concerned about cybersecurity. We know anytime we put our information over the web that it is susceptible. So we want to make sure that all of the information is protected. But streamlining applications and data insertion, I think that is a great thing. Modernization of the system. FSA offices have often complained that they don't communicate well between state at the state level, county level, at the federal level. So just making them all on the same system would make it easier, make it more efficient with less redundancy.
Dr. Rob Johansson's with the American Sugar Alliance.
Yeah, of course, we would say producers would prefer to have a good harvest and market their product as opposed to relying on government programs. But in cases such as we saw with the WIP Plus program back in 2018 and 2019, we had just such a severe hit to the sugar beet industry with the freeze that went on up there, that untimely freeze that froze a lot of those beets in the ground. And we saw recently, this year, Hurricane Ida slamming into Louisiana. I would just say that the WIP Plus program has been effective. Our producers have utilized that program when it's been there, and they've been eligible for those losses. Of course, as I noted, the 2022 freeze down in Florida is not authorized for WIP Plus at this time. But ultimately, that program, or if the committee looks towards WIP, working on the WIP program to make it maybe a standing disaster program or something like it in the next Farm Bill in a way that doesn't interfere with crop insurance. Of course, that, as everybody here on the panel has noted, is really underlying the safety net for a lot of their operations. So we would certainly be receptive to working with the committee on that. And again, I thank you for all your support, certainly in getting that program up this year, and certainly for future disasters that just fall outside of the regular crop insurance safety net sort of regime. Having something like WIP Plus has been very effective for our producers.
It's Agriculture Today.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, National Sales Manager with Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, planting season right around the corner.
Sure, Stephen. As the year begins drier than we expected, keep in mind that sesame is very drought hardy and has a low cost to raise. Our grain handlers are buying Equinom Smarter Sesame in the range of $22 to $24 a bushel, which competes well with other crops in our area. Also, sesame can be an insurable crop in most areas. It should be added to your policy by the 15th of March.
Joe, if somebody wants more information.
Sure, they can reach me at 1-833-SESAME. Or Equinom.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
Sure, and it's something as a country we've been talking about 50 years. So it's been very interesting to see the resurgence, particularly with the new administration coming in and this focus back on carbon.
Dr. Bart Fisher is co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M.
For me, it's interesting because we've at the Policy Center have been working on these issues for decades, and the more things change, the more some things stay the same. And so, you know, on one hand, I do think one good thing about the conversation we're having is that it's, you know, unlike 10 years ago when it was much more about cap and trade and heavy handed, this time around it is much more farmer focused, voluntary, working with producers to make changes. And so I think that is a good thing, but there are still a lot of questions, right? There's a lot of folks, a lot of opportunities that are on the horizon for producers in terms of selling carbon credits, but there's also just a huge number of questions that haven't been answered. And I think one of the themes we heard here today is to be very careful and cautious as you wade through all of this. But again, I still think it's good we're having this conversation as opposed to, you know, one that's much more heavy-handed regulatory in nature.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
But it was also an opportunity for us to make an increased investment in the research necessary to advance climate smart agriculture. We started initially with the thought that maybe we could raise $3 billion of interest as a result of this partnership. Then President Biden challenged us to do $4 billion when he announced this initiative last year. And we felt confident enough that we could get to $8 billion. So we doubled the goal. We saw new Sprint partners. We have a series of companies and entities that are investing hundreds of millions of dollars in innovative programs to try to accelerate the technologies and the innovations that are out there in this climate smart area. IBM came to the meeting and said, we want to be part of this. We want to commit $10 million over the course of the next several years to work with entities like the Nature Conservancy, Heifer International, to focus on smallholder farmers in mid- and low-income countries in an effort to make sure that they, too, are participating in climate-smart practices. So the goal here, the idea, the thought was, we want everybody to be engaged. We want innovation to be advanced. America is providing leadership in this effort, in large part because of what we launched, our strategy for climate smart agriculture. And a key component of that is what we recently announced with the Partnership for Climate Smart Commodities. The theory behind this is pretty simple. The market is demanding to know where food comes from and how it's produced. They want to know, the consumers, when he or she goes into the grocery store, that when they purchase an item, they're not hurting the environment, they're helping the environment. They're looking for opportunities to be supportive. They want us to be able to provide a sustainably produced food. So the market's sending a clear signal domestically and internationally. I can tell you that I was in Japan before I got this job again, and I was talking to a group of business owners who owned a large-scale department store in Japan. We were talking to them about American cheeses and the incredible array of cheeses and quality cheeses that are provided here in the U.S. And I went into great detail with what American dairy farmers are doing relative to climate smart practices. I talked about the fact that they are one of a few dairy industries in the world that actually have embraced an animal welfare standard, one that's internationally certified. It's called the Farm Program, Farmers Assuring Responsible Management. I talked about the effort to get to net zero that the dairy industry had embraced. These individuals began to write feverishly in the book and the notebook that they had brought to the meeting. And I asked them, why were they interested? Why were they writing this down? They said, our consumers really want to know this. This is something that we can help market about American agriculture.
It's Agriculture Today.
When your field calls for the perfect type of tough, go all in on FiberMax Cotton to deliver the right seed for whatever you're up against. Like the FiberMax 2398 GLTP variety. Strong as an ox, fights like a bull. Built to buck stress, boost yield quality, and stand strong when that verticillium wilt comes creeping. Whether you're looking for that type of tough or another, you can find it at FiberMax.com. FiberMax Cotton Seed from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
One, you've got to have the participation of the growers on one end, but you also have to have buy-in from the textile supply chain. We have about 550 or so mill manufacturer members, so they're engaging in each step of the production, at various stages of the production process, from spinning the cotton into yarn all the way up through the cut and sew.
Dr. Gary Adams is President and CEO, National Cotton Council, talking about the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol.
And then on the brand retailer side, approximately 40 members to date. A number of them, I mentioned the Gap earlier. We also have Levi's, PVH, J. Crew, Gildan. So a number of names you would recognize. Some of these are obviously U.S.-based companies, but we also have European-based companies such as Next and Tesco. And again, the value that we're hopefully providing to those brands and retailers is, again, that is if they establish targets of they wanting to be 100% sourcing from what they consider to be sustainable sources by some future year, and in many cases 2025, we want to make sure that as they look at the programs that they put on that list or the fibers that they put on that list, that U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol is on that list.
He talks about the need for transparency.
Yes, the environmental data is part of the is an important part of the program, but also being able to follow that fiber through the supply chain as it moves from one participant to the next. And we do that using both the protocols platform that was developed by a company here in Memphis known as The Seam, but then we have also partnered with a company known as Textile Genesis that has a platform that at the article level, and what's that article level, specific types of yarns, specific fabrics, all the way up through individual products that are produced, T-shirts or khakis or denim, being able to track those transactions through the system and each company along the way that is part of that process is also recording transactions. So it gives us a way to know the companies that are part of the process of getting from the raw fiber, which we have merchandisers in the United States that are members of the program. They're providing that information on the shipments that go to those yarn mills. And then as it goes through from the Textile Genesis system, we're tracking it from yarn to fabric to cut and sew to finished goods and be able to have that documentation of U.S. cotton or Trust Protocol cotton going through each stage of the process.
He was speaking recently at USDA's Ag Outlook Forum on what's ahead for the rest of this year.
Really, a big focus is to continue to promote the program to the brands and retailers. We're now getting them actively engaged in the system that pulls cotton through the system. We refer to that as the consumption management solution. We are continuing to enroll growers on the 2021 crop, and then we'll turn as we get later into this year, focusing on 2022. I do think we have a tremendous opportunity in terms of the demands that are out there from the textile supply chain. And we look at U.S. cotton. We have the ability to provide tremendous amount of data to the textile supply chain. We also have the ability, I believe, to provide transparency that all starts with the fact that here in the United States, we've got a classing program that identifies every bale of U.S. cotton and assigns it that permanent bale identification number. And then we're working to track those transactions through the system. So again, very excited about where we are with the program and a tremendous amount of potential, I think, going forward as we look to grow the demand for U.S. cotton.
It's Agriculture Today.
Like West Texas weather, times can change in an instant, but one thing remains the same. Agriculture will continue to be an indispensable part of our daily lives. South Plains Implement has been your deeply rooted and stable provider of John Deere equipment, parts, and service throughout West Texas and New Mexico for the past 40 years, and we aren't going anywhere. To become a member of our team, visit our careers page, southplainsimplement.com. South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
Aqua Yield Regional Agronomist Dr. Tracy Carrillo talks about using NanoPro to improve your burn down.
NanoPro is a nanoliquid technology that grabs the molecules of your burn down herbicides. It enhances the delivery of your herbicides, making them more efficient. You oftentimes see a 3-to-1 return on investment. This will stretch your chemical use up to 30%, which means you're saving more money, especially with the availability and volatility of chemicals these days.
Find out more at aquayield.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Our nation has the leading agriculture industry in the world, often referred to as the breadbasket of the world.
Representative David Scott from Georgia is the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee.
The good Lord has blessed us in this country to be that leader. But my concern is this. Rising inflation has had a substantial impact on both the prices of our commodities as well as the input costs farmers are facing. Things like fertilizer, several of you have mentioned that. And I believe that the Russia-Ukraine conflict will definitely exacerbate these conditions because Ukraine is a major exporter of raw materials, and a disruption in these exports will surely raise prices globally. And when input prices rise, but support program prices remain the same, it is our farmers who will have to carry that cost.
But increasing costs are concerning. Jacqueline Ford is a Georgia cotton producer.
Our family this year will be participating in stacks rather than PLC. And we will be doing it at a lower level. It'll be a cost of about $10 per acre. We just got sign-ups done this week. But cost is a determinant. You know, our input costs are so much more. So your cost per acre for participating in the crop insurance programs, I mean, I think will determine participation cost, you know. So if we can make that more affordable for the producers as far as participating, I think that would be a good thing. But our cost per acre this year has gone up for cotton probably around 30-40%. So we're looking at an input cost of somewhere between probably $900 to $1,100 per acre right now since the Ukraine war. And right now cotton's trading at $1.01, $1.02. I haven't looked at it this morning. It was up a little bit. So right now we're at about a break-even point at a two-bell average. So, yeah, we certainly need some more support.
Another member of the House Ag Committee from Arkansas is Rick Crawford.
Ms. James, I want to ask you a quick question first. In your testimony, you noted that rice's current $14 per hundredweight reference price was built off cost of production, but that was back in 2012. So that's 10 years ago. I don't want to try and lock you in on what you think an appropriate number is today, given the fact that things are changing so fast in the ag economy. But I do want to ask you just, you know, quite straightforwardly, does $14 per hundredweight reference price represent an adequate safety net for rice producers today based on recent costs of production that you're seeing?
Well, the easy answer is no. And unfortunately, our market prices are just above there. So we're kind of in a really tenuous situation right now in rice. And as you know, there's only about 3 million acres of rice in our country. So if rice farmers are not planting rice and producing rice, we stand to start seeing our infrastructure begin to erode and our mills and dryers not be profitable. Our American end users who are buyers of domestic rice will then have to turn elsewhere. Food security is definitely an issue. So keeping our rice farmers in business is very important, not only to the rice industry, but to American consumers.
Rice producer from Arkansas, Jennifer James, testifying before the House Ag Committee. It's Agriculture Today.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cottonseed from AmeriCotton. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
This is Agriculture Today.
The U.S. sugar industry generates more than 140,000 jobs across 21 states and contributes $20 billion annually to the U.S. economy.
That's Dr. Rob Johansson, formerly with USDA, now with the American Sugar Alliance, testifying before the House Ag Committee.
American consumers benefit from a safe, high-quality, reliable, sustainably produced and affordable source of sugar, an essential ingredient in the nation's food supply. Our product is stored and distributed from multiple facilities strategically located throughout the nation, ready for delivery when and where needed according to the specifications required by our customers. Unlike some other food items, there are no bare spots on grocery store shelves throughout the pandemic. That success is attributable to U.S. sugar policy. I will make four main points today. First, efficient U.S. sugar producers are threatened by less efficient foreign, subsidized, and dumped sugar that usually sells well below the exporter's cost of production. There are no signs of that changing in the foreseeable future. We must not become overly dependent on foreign suppliers for essential goods. That is why an effective sugar policy which maintains a strong domestic industry is essential to the food security of our nation. Second, U.S. sugar policy comes at no cost to the U.S. Treasury. U.S. sugar policy has operated at zero cost to taxpayers 17 of the past 18 years and is expected to do so again this year. The USDA projects zero cost over the next 10 years as well. The one time it did not operate at zero cost was due to Mexico's dumping of sugar onto the U.S. market at below Mexico's production costs, which the International Trade Commission unanimously held violated U.S. trade law. However, the loan rate for raw sugar cane and refined beet sugar has not kept up with inflation nor the rising cost of production. It no longer provides a realistic safety net for our producers. Since the early 1980s, we have closed 68 processing facilities, and most outside investors have exited the remainder of the industry due to the high risk and low returns. It was our family farmers who stepped up to rescue the industry from further closures of their factories, mills, and refineries. Now many of those are struggling. Operating margins are being squeezed each year due to rising labor, fuel, seed, fertilizer, equipment, and interest rate costs that hit our producers in the field as well as in the factories they own. We would support examining how the Farm Bill safety net could be updated in the next Farm Bill for all Title I commodities to better match actual operating costs for producers. Third, sugarcane and sugar beets, like most crops, are grown in areas that experience weather disruptions. Crops are resilient, yet risk protection is needed. Sugarcane and sugar beet farmers do have some insurance products available to them, but those crop insurance tools are not as well developed nor affordable as for some other commodities. Sugar beet farmers have participated in WIP Plus previously, and cane farmers are considering how their losses in 2021 might be eligible for the most recent WIP Plus program. Note that WIP Plus is not currently authorized for recent 2022 disasters, such as the January freeze in Florida. For those reasons, and because this committee has signaled an interest in developing additional risk management programs in Title I to complement crop insurance, we are certainly receptive to new efforts to provide standing disaster coverage in ways that do not undermine crop insurance and possibly even encourage greater participation in coverage levels. And lastly, the current Title I sugar policy can provide an adequate economic safety net for American sugarcane and sugar beet farmers so long as there remains in place effective responses to foreign sugar-producing countries subsidizing and dumping. Without those responses, we would effectively outsource our sugar supply to heavily subsidized and unreliable foreign sugar suppliers whose environmental and labor standards simply do not measure up to our own. That would be the opposite of strengthening supply chains and contrary to providing a safety net to American producers.
It's Agriculture Today.
When your field calls for the perfect type of tough, go all in on FiberMax Cotton to deliver the right seed for whatever you're up against. Like the FiberMax 1621 GL variety. Strong as an ox, fights like a bull. Built to buck stress, boost yield quality, and muscle up when bacterial blight throws down. Whether you're looking for that type of tough or another, you can find it at FiberMax.com. FiberMax Cotton Seed from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
The advantages that we have to provide financial services in the ag is top-notch. It's the best in the country. We have a capital management plan that we all celebrate and hold very close to us at Capital Farm Credit. And that capital management plan is premised on the fact that we're a cooperative. So as a cooperative, we believe that the members of the cooperative own the capital of the cooperative. At Capital Farm Credit, together, we're better.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
These are serious times, particularly in the wheat market. Lots of concern about what's likely to happen in Ukraine and Ukraine agriculture and their logistics, their ability to produce for the foreseeable future, much less move grains out of their ports.
Dan O'Brien is a grain marketing economist at Kansas State University.
So with all that turmoil, we see uproar in the wheat market in particular, but some of that's bled over also into the corn market and the oilseed soybean market, corn market, because Ukraine's the number four corn exporter in the world, and into the oilseed market because their sunflower crop is important also. So you have all those issues, much less with the impact of financial sanctions, trade sanctions, whatever, upon Russian crop availability could also be. So just amazing to see, you know, we try to track Kansas cash prices, and cash prices for wheat across the board at these places. We've been watching Colby cash price 1115, Salina 1130, 1130 in Topeka, Garden City 1130, 1130 in Hutchinson 1105 and in Columbus. And those aren't soybean prices. Those are wheat prices. We have some bids for new crop for wheat, but there are at least discussion about the potential lack of availability of forward bids for wheat. Now, of course, it's a six of one half, a dozen of the other deal, and that, yeah, we may or may not have forward bids available, but with all the drought conditions that are occurring in Kansas and until rain comes, expanding to cover the whole state of Kansas, according to U.S. Drought Monitor, all of Nebraska, all of Iowa now, northern tip of Illinois up into Wisconsin, of course, South Dakota, North Dakota, at least western halves of that, and all of Texas, all of Oklahoma. So what a year to have dry conditions right on top of all this other uproar. You know, these are times that perhaps we're always on the cusp of times like this with, you know, 30 days of dry weather or something happening. But this just drives home how risky providing food supplies for the world population can be when you have just a few issues come into play. And boy, they sure have right now.
And while we're focused on infrastructure issues here at home, the Ukrainian issues are large.
We could have a long talk, and probably will sometime, about what's happened to the infrastructure in Ukraine, whether they'll be able to plant crops, whether they'll be able to harvest what's out there in terms of wheat already. And if they do, then who will be there to move the grain, depending on how this conflict comes out? Who's there to own the machinery to make it all happen? So just a lot of roiling up of questions and uncertainty, and it certainly affected the ag markets at this time.
Which brings us full circle back to exports.
Corn is running ahead of pace to meet the USDA's projections. So, you know, here we have a WASDE report coming up on Wednesday the 9th. I don't know that in that report yet you'll see the USDA make major changes in their export numbers, but strong corn exports probably going to lead to tighter ending stocks coming out of this market year, tighter beginning stocks starting the next. So that's a big deal. Grain sorghum's been up and down, had a great week last week. It's so weak again. But again, that's sort of their pattern, up and down. Wheat exports, after a tremendous week for the week ending the 17th, going to return to their normal pattern, about 13 million bushels for the U.S. overall. But I don't think that the market is trading current exports for the United States. I think it's trading what they fear would happen if Ukrainian wheat's unavailable, and that's where that number's coming in. I would say also for soybeans, running ahead of pace, also meet the USDA's projections, so probably some tightening up in this old crop marketing year for that as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Did you know that the world-famous Café Du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like a Café Du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
As everyone in the dairy business knows,
exports are crucial to U.S. dairy in general. Over 17% of U.S. dairy ends up in overseas markets.
That's William Laux with the U.S. Dairy Export Council. He told last week's USDA Outlook Forum a big percentage of U.S. dairy product export shipments leave from West Coast ports, and we all know what's been going on there and elsewhere.
Congestion, delays, rolled bookings, higher costs, you name it.
But last year, even with all those bottlenecks,
the U.S. dairy industry managed record exports.
And he says 2022 could top last year's record by a little bit as long as the transportation system doesn't get any worse. And there is one more worry. It's about the record high prices dairy products are fetching around the world. The worry is,
can international consumers afford these record high prices?
Prices not seen in at least 9 years. And he says when prices get too high, demand and sales can come down quite a bit. But no sign of that, at least not yet. Gary Crawford, Washington.